Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you hear the latest on plans of a reroute of the Calumet Trail to showcase the Indiana Dunes National Park. The 2021 legislative session ended with a surprisingly bipartisan approval of the budget. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Indiana State Senator Eddie Melton as he shares his reaction to the verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Gary Mayor Jerome Prince is satisfied with the verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial. In a release statement, Prince said he, like most Americans, was horrified at the way Chauvin tortured and killed George Floyd. Prince said in this case, the jury made the right decision and showed we can achieve moments of justice in our country. The mayor said that every day, police officers across our country put their lives on the line and do the best they can to protect our communities. He goes on to say, it is often horrifying and always tragic when our public servants devalue human life. And in the same press release by Mayor Prince, he goes on to discuss the Police Reform Commission that was formed in Gary that will make recommendations on their findings in their examination of Gary's police department. Prince said he and his team will carefully consider their recommendations and decide what, if any, steps they will take. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Porter County is planning a reroute of the Calumet Trail to allow bike riders and pedestrians to see more of Indiana Dunes National Park's national beauty. Final costs for the trail project have not been set, but Robert Thompson, the county's director of planning and development, estimated the cost at $5 million to $6 million. The Times reports the existing trail, which includes a path along a NIPSCO right-of-way, includes traveling on top of a natural gas pipeline and under high-tension electric lines. The proposed new route would travel just north of the existing South Shore Line tracks from Mineral Springs Road to the Dune Park Station at Indiana 49. Michigan City is planning to connect to that trailhead. A push-button device would be installed where the trail crosses US 12 to activate a traffic signal so riders and pedestrians could safely cross US 12. A section of Beverly Drive in Beverly Shores that has been closed to the public over drainage issues would be rehabilitated and reopened for bicycle and pedestrian use as part of the reworked Calumet Trail. It would remain closed to motorized vehicles. The county has approved engineering and design contracts with She Inc. and DLZ Corp. for the trail.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Four police officers in Muncie have been indicted on more federal charges for using excessive force on arrestees and covering up the 2018 incidents. They now face federal trials. In March of last year, Officers Chase Winkle and Jeremy Gibson and Sergeant Joseph Cresha were indicted on 12 total federal counts. Wednesday, 17 additional federal counts were added, and another officer, Corey Posey, was charged. The charges stem from instances in 2018 where people the officers arrested suffered serious injuries. The officer with the most charges against him is Chase Winkle. According to the FBI investigation that led to the incident, Winkle kicked, punched, used knee strikes and a taser on several arrestees without justification. At the time of these arrests, Winkle's father, Joe Winkle, was a police chief. Chase Winkle has also served at times as a public face of the force as a public information officer.
Officer Posey was added to the federal indictment Wednesday, and federal investigators say he wrote a false report minimizing Winkle's use of force. In a statement, current Muncie Police Chief Nathan Sloan says the department continues to focus on community engagement, police revision, officer accountability, and continuing education and training for officers.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Republicans called the 2021 legislative session transformational. Democrats, however, were not quite so effusive with their praise. But everyone agrees it was a session no one will likely forget, impacted in every way by the COVID-19 pandemic. House Speaker Todd Houston lamented the lack of connection among lawmakers this year, driven by the pandemic. But he says COVID-19 also brought positive change.
Really forced communication among members on their bills to be far better. And I think the challenge for Senator Bray and I moving forward is how do you...
The session ended on a note of bipartisanship, with almost every Democrat joining Republicans to vote for the new state budget. Still, Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor says some priorities are misaligned. He says that's evidenced by a decision made late in session not to mirror the federal government and allow Hoosiers to deduct unemployment benefits from their 2020 taxes.
But at the same time, the PPP loans that the business community saw, we don't tax as income in Indiana. I think that's a stark contrast.
COVID-19 is also changing the way the session ended. Technically, the session will keep going until this fall when lawmakers return for redistricting. The information they need from the federal government to redraw district lines is delayed.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Maybe the biggest surprise of the 2021 legislative session happened on its final day when a new $37 billion state budget passed with almost no opposition. A revenue forecast unveiled a week ago was the game changer. It projected $2 billion more for the new budget, much of it put into K-12 education that all but guarantees teacher pay raises. There's also more than $5 billion in one-time spending, paying down debt, and investing in infrastructure projects and economic recovery. For Democrats, praise was focused in a specific direction. Here's Senator Eddie Melton.
Thank God for the American Rescue Plan. Thank God for Joe Biden.
Republican Representative Matt Lehman, who touted the fiscal leadership of Indiana Republicans, called it a wow budget.
We're going to put broadband into your communities. We're going to build water infrastructure in our communities. And we are setting the table to grow rapidly.
There were three Democrats who voted against the budget. They could not stomach the significant expansion for private school vouchers. Two Republicans also voted against it without public explanation.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana's so-called red flag law could have stopped 19-year-old Brandon Hole from legally buying the guns he used to kill 8 people at a FedEx facility last week. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports on what went wrong.
Police seized a gun from Hole last year following a mental health call from his mother, who worried her son would harm himself. No petition was filed. The law says a court hearing should take place within 14 days of seizure. Marion County Prosecutor Ryan Mears says this tight window and a lack of access to mental health records limits the office in building a case.
We want to be able to say we made a decision based on having an opportunity to talk to healthcare professionals, review medical records, look at someone's mental health history. Those are the things that should be important to these determinations, and the time frame in the statute just doesn't allow for that.
Because the family willingly gave up the weapon, Hull was briefly transferred to a mental health facility, and no one contested the seizure. A follow-up petition was also not filed. For the law to work, a court would need to determine that the individual has a propensity for violence or mental instability. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
For many families, the mass shooting last week at an Indianapolis FedEx facility raises tough questions of how to talk to children about such events. Indiana Youth Institute President and CEO Tammy Silverman says right after an incident, first, look inward.
You need to make sure that, first and foremost, for all ages, that you process your own emotional response first and separately from your child.
Silverman says determining how much information to share depends on the age of the child. Children 8 and under likely don't need to be told. For preteens, a quick response that is thought out ahead of time may work best. For older children, Silverman says it's important to listen to what they have to say.
Teenagers also often look for hypocrisy, so they're going to challenge you on your responses. What's being done? Who's accountable? How are you going to keep me safe?
This is the third mass shooting in Indianapolis this year.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana is among 7 states selected to pilot a federal initiative to increase employment for those experiencing mental health conditions. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports the Department of Labor is calling it the Aspire Initiative.
Aspire stands for Advancing State Policy Integration for Recovery and Employment. The goal is to help people with mental health conditions get and stay in jobs where they're paid competitive wages in a traditional workplace setting. Indiana won't receive federal funding, but will receive technical assistance to carry out a statewide plan. Jennifer Sheehy at DOL's Office of Disability Employment Policy says many states applied, but reviewers were impressed that Indiana's application viewed employment as a step in recovery.
It sounded like a very holistic approach to not only dealing with the person, but also within the state structures.
The National Alliance on Mental Illness estimates roughly 80% of those receiving public mental health services in Indiana are unemployed. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Indiana Commission for Higher Education is extending the deadline for filing the federal application for student financial aid. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay explains the commission announced the extension Monday.
There is no new deadline for students to submit their free application for federal student aid or FAFSA. Instead, the commission says limited award funding will be issued on a first-come, first-served basis. The commission made a similar move last year as the emerging COVID-19 pandemic prompted concerns about students' access to adequate support for filing the application. According to the commission, FAFSA filing rates are lagging behind previous years. The agency says the class of 2021's FAFSA filing rate is down by at least 6%. The filing rate among low-income students is also down by nearly 14%. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Maybe you got a DUI in your 20s. Maybe you stole diapers from a Walmart as a young mom. Researchers estimate that 1 in 7 Americans has a misdemeanor on their criminal record. And even a single conviction can make higher paying jobs and better housing harder or downright impossible to reach. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Priya Madhavan reports that while Indiana does let people conceal nonviolent convictions from employers and landlords, many still face financial hurdles to get there.
The legal word for sealing a conviction from public searches is expungement. And Julie Mennel assists a lot of people with expungements in Marion County.
I had a man that came to me once, and I don't remember what he'd been convicted of long ago, that his daughter was hit and killed by a semi driver on 37, and he couldn't get his child out of foster care because of it.
Bennell works at the Neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic, which is one of the groups in the state trying to connect more people to this service. Since the Second Chance Law passed in 2013, the number of people seeking expungements has continued to grow. The most recent data available from Bennell's office shows a 150% increase in the petitions they helped file. But there are still barriers, and chief among them, the court fees you have to pay back to be eligible, and the additional fees to even apply.
There's a filing fee of $157 for the entire petition. So that could be representative of one case or 50 million cases.
Okay, 50 million cases is an exaggeration. But many people do have more than one charge on their record. And if the charges happen to be in different counties, then you've got to pay that fee again for every new county.
And there's people who have lots of cases in multiple counties, and they can be paying thousands of dollars for an expungement. And face it, how many people can really afford to do that?
The thousands of dollars can come from filing fees, but can also come from court costs. Those can look like a public defender fee, drug or alcohol-related classes, or probation-related costs, among other things.
There was just about a fee for everything, to be honest.
That's Jade, a college student in Monroe County who was charged with a DUI in 2018. We're using just their middle name for this story because linking their full name back to their DUI may still jeopardize future job opportunities. One of the first things Jade's probation officer walked them through after their conviction was the court fees they owed. It came out to more than $1,000.
Yeah, working a minimum wage and being a full-time student like did not leave me a lot of time to actually make money.
After slowly chipping away at it, Jade did pay off their court fees and was granted an early expungement this past February. But not everyone can slowly chip away at those fees. While court fees like Jade's exist to help offset the administrative costs to keep a court up and running, many who work within the system say the financial barriers they impose can also exacerbate the cycle of poverty. Attorney Jessica Beheit sees that up close.
They often borrow money from family members. They use their tax refunds. They forego paying other bills.
Beheit works with Indiana Legal Services Expungement Desk. She says her clients often run a cost-benefit analysis in their heads when it comes to these fees.
This is such an important thing for them. They're going to figure out how to afford it.
On average, in Indiana, court costs come out to about $500 per case. That's according to research from Indiana University's Criminal Justice Department. Michelle Ying is a project coordinator for that study.
$500, you know, may not sound completely overwhelming, but if you look at that as a number of hours worked for someone making $7 an hour, it's a lot of hours.
There are four states that offer automatic expungements after a certain period of time. But for now, expungement help desk services in Indiana do their best to facilitate the process for free and dismiss any barrier causing court fees they can. Indiana Legal Services and the Neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic are in that group, and they continue to see growing interest in expungements into 2021. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Priya Mahadevan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with State Senator Eddie Melton.
We have more local reaction to the Derek Chauvin verdict from Minneapolis. And this time we are looking in respect to Public Law 12, which has been passed and is now in Indiana law concerning police reform. We have the co-sponsor of the House bill that in turn became Public Law 12, State Senator Eddie Melton of Gary. And Senator Melton, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I know that you recently put out a statement after the verdict came out in the trial on behalf of the Indiana Democratic Party. Will you go over your statement and your thoughts in general about what the verdict was and the case itself in particular?
Yes. Well, myself and my caucus, the Senate Democrats, as well as the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus, we are tremendously happy to see the verdict of guilty of all charges come at the trial yesterday. It's definitely a blessing for the family of Mr. Floyd to see justice prevail. But the stark reality of the situation is that Mr. Floyd still didn't have to die. And dying at the hands of an officer that acted recklessly, we're just pleased that justice will be served, and we're hoping that the sentencing will be according to just the crime. Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts that you feel that that black men like yourself in cities like Gary and even Indianapolis are facing these days, and the impact that the verdict and no doubt whenever the sentence is handed down on Mr. Chauvin will breathe out to everybody, the concern about black problems of police reform in general?
Well, you and I talked about it earlier this session when we, the Black Caucus, went across the entire state, had town halls and discussions with grassroots organizations, faith-based organizations, as well as law enforcement agencies to talk about the reform that's needed when it comes down to policing in our communities. We know that there's a history of systemic racism, not only in our policing police system across the nation, but in our sentencing as well as our overall prison systems as well. So there's an overhaul of all sorts of reform that needs to take place. And that's something that we've been working on this session with the passage of House Bill 1006. That was a bipartisan effort to make some of those reforms come to life here in the state of Indiana, banning the use of a chokehold, ensuring de-escalation training is taking place, and ensuring that there's a variety of other things from the misconduct that an officer will be held accountable for.
USA Today and Ipsos got together and surveyed 1,000 American adults online from all states just hours after the guilty verdict was announced about Mr. Chauvin. And the results of the poll in general found that Americans were overwhelmingly approval of the jury's findings. And they mentioned, for example, 71% of the Americans surveyed agreed that Chauvin was guilty. And most Americans that were surveyed followed at least some coverage of the trial. And 62% of those polled said they would accept the verdict and do nothing further, like march or protest. And of that, 61% of Democrats and Republicans alike answered in that respect. Do those findings surprise you, that we may feel that there are a majority of Americans who feel that that justice was served in some respect, and in turn, that it's time to reflect and to make changes rather than protest?
No, it doesn't surprise me. All I can say is thank God for those that recorded that situation so we have evidence and proof that was clear, that was concise. But sadly, it was a situation that we've seen a life loss before the entire world. So having that tragic incident occur before our very eyes, I think it opened up the minds and the hearts of individuals throughout the world and throughout this nation to say that something has to change. And we've been saying it for so long that black lives do matter, and it's something that we shouldn't have to say. But myself and my colleagues, we're going to continue to say that black lives matter. We want to hold our colleagues accountable. We ask our constituents to hold us accountable to ensure that we pass policies that show that black lives matter in this society.
I also know, too, that the Minnesota Attorney General, Keith Ellison, had a statement, and he said that the verdict seemed to represent what he called a new era of police accountability to end recurring and enduring deaths at the hands of law enforcement. And that pretty much sum it up as far as you feel for the Hoosier State is concerned. It's the same sort of goals, the same sort of objectives we should face here?
Well, I think we're just at the beginning point with 1006. With the House bill that just passed and the governor signed into law just a few weeks ago. I wouldn't go as far as saying that we've reached a new era. I think there are a lot of minds that need to be changed when it comes down to criminal justice reform as a whole. But the main thing that we want to ensure is that there's transparency when it comes down to policing. There's accountability. So that's extremely important to myself. It's extremely important to my district. And it's something that we're going to have to continue to fight for.
Have you gotten any feedback from any of your constituents and from public officials here in Northwest Indiana in your district about the results of the trial and in particular how they fit together with Public Law 12?
Well, we've been trying to keep in tune as much as possible of the feedback to media. As you know, we're still in session. Mm-hmm. We're just a few hours away from passing the state budget. And we've been working tremendously hard on that. But I try my best to stay in tune with what's going on the ground. I believe a lot of my constituents are still pleased and happy to see the verdict come, but the reality we already know is that there were already shootings that occurred after the trial took place and the guilty pleas came down. So this is an ongoing thing. This is just one victory for the family, one victory for the nation for us to see. But there's so many other situations and issues where we don't see the accountability that should be there when we see black lives lost at the hands of law enforcement.
State Senator Eddie Melton, thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you so much.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.